good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond. The last few articles we're going to look at this evening, and actually one book excerpt, are going to deal with indications of that the sort of congressional pressure that we saw from Congressman Bosco, and again, whether there are any links between his pressure on Arias vis-a-vis John Hull and his pressure on the bank board vis-a-vis Centennial remains to be seen. But there are indications that there is going to be a massive official cover-up, that official cover-up may well be underway, and that, at least to a certain extent, the CIA connections to the SNL crisis may be one of the reasons why we're going to see this cover-up. Now, looking at the San Francisco Chronicle from Wednesday, April 4th of 1990, in fact, the very same day that the very first Houston Post article we looked at this evening came out, there was an indication that SNL probers were involved. Their belief was they were involved in a whitewash of the Lincoln Savings and Loan case all along. Now, in a nutshell, looking at this particular case, this particular allegation here, again, San Francisco Chronicle, Wednesday, April 4th of 1990. This is an article by George Williamson of the Chronicle Washington Bureau. It's Dateline Washington, and it reads in part as follows. Field regulators charged with examining Lincoln savings for the federal government felt that their superiors were trying to impose a whitewash, according to notes obtained by the Chronicle. The handwritten notes, which were also in the possession of the House Banking Committee, were made in early September of 1988. They quote one regulator as saying he was, quote, amazed, unquote, to find the two government administrators of the Lincoln examination, quote, sounded like management of the association who were defending the Lincoln projects, unquote. The 25 small pages of on-the-scene observations provided explosive detail of frontline regulators' frustrations and suspicions over two summer months of an examination of Lincoln's operations. The examination was conducted under terms of a now-controversial Memorandum of Understanding worked out between Lincoln and the Federal Home Loan Bank Board's upper hierarchy in Washington on May 20th, 1988. Bear in mind the fact that federal probers felt that their superiors wanted a whitewash of the Lincoln Savings and Loan case. Now, bear in mind that Charles Keating is the key figure with regard to Lincoln Savings and Loan. Charles Keating has also cropped up in connection with the Silverado Savings and Loan case and MDC. There are two different investigations, but both, to a certain extent, involve Charles Keating. And as we've seen, some of the same elements involved in the Silverado Savings and Loan case intersect directly with the CIA connection to the savings and loan case. Frank Corson and G. Wayne Reeder being two of the apparently hard CIA links between the Silverado tangle and those are the two CIA links to the Silverado tangle. A lot of the organized crime people involved in Silverado also have links to CIA, but both Corson and G. Wayne Reeder, both with apparent links to CIA, two of the people in the Silverado tangle. Recall that Corson's Vision Bank was one of the banks brought low by the Lawrence Freeman deal that we looked at the very beginning of the broadcast this evening. Now, Charles Keating, and bear in mind the fact that if the CIA connection to the SNLs ever fully unravels, then we're going to see, in addition to people like Alan Cranston getting wet, we're going to see people perhaps like Neil Bush and elements of the Iran-Contra crew getting wet as well. There are indications that that's exactly why we're going to see a cover-up, and I suspect, at least from the information presented so far, that the cover-up we saw foreshadowed of the Lincoln Savings and Loan case is in fact going on. Now, reading from the San Francisco Examiner of Wednesday, April 11th of 1990, we find the following AP story, Dateline Washington, headlined, Judge, quote, in a quandary over Lincoln Savings case. A federal judge said Tuesday that regulators should explain why they slashed the estimated value of financier Charles Keating's Lincoln Savings and Loan Association and other investments. Quote, the government says it's $2 billion in the red, and the former operator says it's $600 million in the black, U.S. District Judge Stanley Sporkin said. Bear in mind the name Stanley Sporkin. Again, quoting, I'm in a quandary, unquote. Sporkin suggested calling in the court-appointed receiver in the case to explain the difference. The judge's comments came after Keating testified that Lincoln was worth $500 million to $700 million when the government seized it a year ago. The financier is trying to regain control of the Irvine Thrift, which was seized by the government along with its large real estate holdings a year ago. James Murphy, an attorney representing the government in its defense to Keating's suit challenging the takeover, tried to dissuade the judge. He said reports by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation on Lincoln's status were already court records. Sporkin's suggestion brought broad smiles from Keating and several associates. Once again, Sporkin's suggestion brought broad smiles from Keating and several associates. Now, Keating and those several associates are suing to overturn the federal government's seizure of the Lincoln Savings and Loan. Now, again, bear in mind that if Charles Keating's operations are ever unraveled to the extent that they might, and while they may not go directly from the Lincoln Savings and Loan to some of the elements we're looking at in the CIA SNL link, certainly some of the other investigations, including the related Silverado investigation, will. Now, bear in mind Stanley Sporkin, because Stanley Sporkin was, in addition, he's now a federal judge, but he was formerly chief counsel for the CIA during many of the investigations into Edwin Wilson's operations, and those operations, obviously, as we've looked at in Radio Free America shows 4 and 30, among others, involve many of the key players in the Iran-Contra scandal. And obviously some of those same figures figure very prominently in the background of the CIA connection to the SNL crisis, Eatsco being one of the many connections. Now I'm going to read a short section from a book called Manhunt, subtitled The Incredible Pursuit of a CIA Agent Turned Terrorist by Peter Maas. That's copyright 1986 by Random House, and that's, by the way, the hardcover edition. And there's a discussion of Stanley Sporkin and his role as CIA chief counsel, and as we shall see, the people working under Stanley Sporkin were able to see to it that the links, the investigation of the Triple Wilson operation, including, as I said, many of the same people cropping up in the background of the CIA-SNL connection, that was kept short of the obvious national security connections. They were made out to be ex-CIA agents. Obviously, they weren't ex-agents at all. Reading now from Manhunt, The Incredible Pursuit of a CIA Agent-Turned-Terrorist by Peter Maas. Wilson and Turple and Mulcahy were the talk of the town. By the way, that's Kevin Mulcahy, one of the deceased witnesses in the case. On the Saturday before the second installment was to appear, advanced copies of it already in circulation, Barcella received an urgent summons from Stanley Sporkin, the CIA's new general counsel. In his Langley office, Sporkin told Barcella and Bruce that President Reagan had called William Casey, the recently appointed director of the agency, and said that he wanted to get to the bottom of the charges contained in the Hirsch articles. Chief Counsel Sporkin had come into the CIA with Casey, and he asked Barcella if he was receiving all the help he needed. By the way, Barcella is the chief prosecutor in the case. Beginning again, Sporkin had come into the CIA with Casey, and he asked Barcella if he was receiving all the help he needed. Barcella said that he'd like a little faster action on some of his queries. An agency lawyer, a woman who had been acting as liaison with Barcella, was present, and Sporkin instructed her to give top priority to whatever information Barcella requested. She did her job, too, energetically. In 6 months, an annoyed clandestine directorate succeeded in having her replaced. It wasn't about to let outsiders pry into its affairs, no matter what the reason for the inquiry was, or who ordered it. CIA directors and general counsels came and went, but the directorate remained. So again, Chief Counsel Stanley Sporkin obviously involved in helping to limit the investigation into Turple and Wilson. The people who were working under him there were, at least that one woman, was replaced for apparently cooperating too energetically with the prosecutor. Regardless of Stanley Sporkin's personal feelings about some of these things, the available information suggests that he's willing to play ball with the old boys at the CIA. One must ask questions about Stanley Sporkin, now a federal judge, his apparently favorable ruling a week or two ago to Charles Keating's suit, and Keating again is trying to overturn the federal seizure of Lincoln Savings and Loan, because if Charles Keating were to be investigated as fully as he might, we might find some of the same CIA connections to the SNL crisis and some of the same Triple Wilson-related elements that we see that were involved in Barcella's investigation. Well, we might see those cropping up in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal and the CIA connection to the SNL case as well. Again, whether or not some of the potential CIA disclosures, some of the potential CIA connections to some of Keating's other interests, notably the Silverado savings and loan case, the links to Neil Bush, whether or not those might come out, and whether or not that has anything to do with Stanley Sporkin's ruling under the circumstances, we'll never know for sure. But in light of the common elements, as I said, involved with Barcella's investigation of Turple Wilson in the early 80s, when Sporkin was chief CIA counsel, in light of the fact that some of those same elements obviously figure in the CIA connection to the SNL scandals, it's certainly interesting to watch Sporkin, interesting to see him involved in Charles Keating's suit, and it'll be interesting to see how he acts, and it'll be interesting to speculate about why he's acting the way he's acting. Certainly not an encouraging development, and one which, at least to my way of thinking, would indicate further cover-up to come. That also would appear to be the implication of at least a possible interpretation of George Bush's appointee to oversee the bailout of the SNL, of the SNLs. Now, the individual that George Bush nominated to oversee the SNL bailout received a lot of flack initially because of alleged inexperience, also because he had supposedly tried cocaine and marijuana a number of years ago. It's sort of ironic that people were raising objections about that, because that would appear to be the least of people's problems vis-a-vis Timothy Ryan, the Bush appointee to handle the SNL bailout. AP story dateline or headline, SNL bailout gets court's go-ahead, subheaded, order barring seizure of thrift is lifted, dateline Washington. President Bush's savings and loan bailout got a reprieve yesterday when a federal appellate court ruled that the government can seize a suburban Chicago thrift institution. Skipping down. Meanwhile, Bush moved on another front to blunt the effect of the suit by nominating a former Labor Department attorney as the nation's top savings and loan regulator. Bush formally asked the Senate to confirm T. Timothy Ryan, Jr. to a five-year term as director of the Thrift Office. The Senate Banking Committee could hold a confirmation hearing on Ryan as soon as next week, if committee members agree, said a senior staff aide to the panel. And here's the key part of the article. Ryan, 44, is a partner in the Washington law firm of Reed, Smith, Shaw, and McClay, specializing in pension and employee benefit law. He supervised about 600 attorneys as solicitor of the Labor Department from 1981 to 1983 under Secretary Raymond Donovan. Now, his position here under Raymond Donovan is interesting here because Raymond Donovan, first of all, was one of the key people that Reagan transition appointee Jackie Presser helped to shoehorn into the administration. Now, Jackie Presser, of course, was former head of the Teamsters Union. The organized crime connections to the Teamsters need scarcely be gone into at this point. Suffice it to say that a number of the organized crime figures that crop up in connection with this connected to some of the Teamster shenanigans. Now, in turn, Ray Donovan stood trial for alleged organized crime activity in connection with the Schiavone Construction Company. It should be noted that he was acquitted in this particular prosecution. He was never convicted. But it's worth noting that Jackie Presser protege Raymond Donovan was acquitted when one of the key prosecution witnesses was murdered, a man named Farino. I'm not sure offhand whether it was Fred or Frank Farino, was found shot to death in the trunk of a car. The son of another witness, a fellow named Maselli, William Maselli Jr., I believe his name was. Anyway, William Maselli's son was also found murdered during the course of the investigation. So even though Raymond Donovan was acquitted, I think there are some very, very serious questions to be asked about the man's background in light of the fact that his acquittal took place with one of the key witnesses being murdered and the son of another witness being murdered. It certainly is not an encouraging development vis-a-vis Ray Donovan. Doesn't inspire a lot of confidence in the verdict. Should also be noted that former OSS operative Mario Marola, Brooklyn District Attorney, but anyway, he was the fellow that was accused of the weak prosecution of Ray Donovan. We looked at Mario Marola and his background in the OSS in connection with The Ultimate Evil, the series we did on Satanism. So again, Ryan, 44, worked under Ray Donovan in the Labor Department. Ray Donovan himself got into the Reagan administration as a result of efforts by Jackie Presser of the Teamsters Union. And even though he was acquitted in his case vis-a-vis the Schiavone Construction Company, the fact that a key prosecution witness turned up dead and the son of another witness turned up murdered raises some questions about the verdict, and I think in turn there are some very interesting questions to be asked and very important questions to be asked and answered about Timothy Ryan, the head of the SNL bailout, appointed to head it up by George Bush. I'm now going to take a couple of minutes and sum up basically what we've looked at or review what we've looked at. We began, and again, this is a very complicated case. One of the reasons why I'm repeating material is because so many of the relationships are confusing. Indeed, if you actually work out the flow charts, they become circular. We began by taking a look at an article from the Houston Post of April 4th of 1990. That article dealt with Lawrence Freeman, one of the people tied to Frank Corson, one of the CIA connections to the Silverado milieu. We took a look at Lawrence Freeman. His work as a partner of former OSS and CIA operative Paul Helliwell, his work as chief counsel for the Castle Bank, a CIA and organized crime money laundering institution. And we took a look, too, at the link between Freeman, a fellow named Adkinson, a land deal which helped bring down two of the savings and loan institutions in question here. After that, we took a look at some material from In Banks We Trust by Penny Lernew, at which we took a look at Paul Helliwell, his career in the OSS. We took a look at, in a nutshell, very briefly, at some of the origins of the organized crime intelligence narcotics link. And we're going to go back to those in a big way in Radio Free America 24. And we also took a look at the formation of the Castle Bank, one of the institutions that Paul Helliwell was noted for. And again, Jonathan Quitney asked the question about whether the Nugent Hand Bank that we looked at in Radio Free America 25 fulfilled the role of the Castle Bank. We, in turn, are asking the question here about whether once Nugent Hand went under in 1980, whether perhaps the SNLs took the place of Nugent Hand. After that, we began looking at the Southmark Corporation, one of the major links, one of the major threads linking so many of the elements that we've looked at. We took a look at material from Inside Job linking Southmark to the aforementioned Charles Keating, to people connected with Drexel Burnham Lambert, Michael Milken, Henry K. Beebe, and, of course, Mario Renda, one of the people involved with the Centennial Savings and Loan. We took a look at links between Southmark and the Silverado Savings and Loan, the main name there, MDC and its chairman, Larry Mizell. We took a look at G. Wayne Reeder and its link to Silverado. We then took a look at links between G. Wayne Reeder, one of the main intelligence connections to the Silverado milieu, and Mario Renda and the San Marino Savings and Loan failure. After that, we took a look at Renda's role in helping to build up the Centennial Savings and Loan, and Centennial Savings and Loan, of course, the link between the drug tug case and the CIA link to the SNL failures. We took a look at Renda's role in brokering Bureau of Indian Affairs funds for Centennial, and we took a look at the drug smuggling case that Sid Shaw was indicted for laundering the money for. Sid Shaw, along with Irwin Hansen, two of the key players in the Centennial Savings and Loan failure. We asked the question about whether or not that drug smuggling operation may be connected to the drug tug case. In turn, we looked at Assistant U.S. Attorney Peter Robinson, and we took a look at his role in, not pursuing very vigorously, let's say, the Centennial situation. We also looked at how he then promptly retired and moved into Centennial's old headquarters in the Stone House. We then reviewed information from the drug tug case part four, linking Peter Robinson with Charles Duck and with a number of interesting elements that figure in the Iran-Contra scandal or the drug tug case. Robinson also apparently represents a member of the Medellin cartel, as well as another Len Vest officer, a guy named David Dixon. After reviewing the material from Drug Tug Part 4, we reviewed material from the Napa Sentinel from November 7th of 1989, that detailing some connections between Charles Duck, the Landvest bankruptcy trustee represented illegally by former Assistant U.S. Attorney Peter Robinson, and we looked at the links between Centennial Savings and Loan, the Wild Oak property, and Charles Duck. We then took a look at two Napa Sentinel articles beginning an examination of not only the CIA link to the SNLs, but also links between that, the Centennial situation, Doug Bosco, and also the drug tug case or elements therein. We took a look at Doug Bosco's cozy relationship with Centennial, and we took a look at Doug Bosco's efforts to get the bank board to hand Centennial back over to its corrupt overseers. Basically, the bank board shut Centennial's operations down. This raised a howl of protest from Doug Bosco, And we asked the question about whether or not there might be a relationship between Bosco's going to bat for Centennial and Bosco's going to bat for John Hull, which we saw him do not only in our second installment of this series, but also the first installment of the Drug Tug case per se. We reviewed information from Inside Job detailing the Bosco-Centennial connection, and we also reviewed information from the San Francisco Chronicle from Christmas Day, seeing how we saw movement with Noriega. When he turned up alive and well at the Vatican Embassy, there was a key arrest. Two of the key people involved in the Lenvest case, David Hansen and Robert Pittner, were hauled in that very same day. We then took a look at allegations by probers of the Lincoln Savings and Loan that they felt their superiors wanted to whitewash. And we then looked at a decision that U.S. Judge Stanley Sporkin made, which apparently pleased Charles Keating and his counsel in their suit to have the federal seizure of the Lincoln Savings and Loan overturned. We then took a look at how federal judge Stanley Sporkin used to be chief counsel for the CIA when the limited investigation into the operations of Turple and Wilson was going on in the early 1980s, and we saw how people working under Stanley Sporkin were apparently compromised, or their work was compromised, in that investigation. Obviously, this raises questions about the vigorousness of the research or the pursuit of Charles Keating's situation. And we concluded by a look at Timothy Ryan, the person who's going to be overseeing the SNL bailouts. We looked at his connection with Raymond Donovan and mused about how that also is not the most optimistic of relationships. We don't know whether Ryan is cut from the same cloth as Ray Donovan, but he certainly worked under him, and it's within the realm of possibility that he's compromised in a fashion similar to the way Ray Donovan appears to have been. That's what we looked at this evening, and we've pretty much used up the time for the broad. That pretty much winds it up for this evening. Just a couple of minutes now to give additional information. In the first place, the address for the Napa Sentinel, which is now doing a series talking not only about the CIA links to the SNL case, but obviously bringing the drug tug back into it as well. The Napa Sentinel has put together a press packet of all of their articles on the drug tug case. That can be obtained from the Napa Sentinel at 925 Lincoln Avenue as an Honest Abe. That's in Napa, zip code 94558. 94558. The phone, 707-257-6272. 707-257-NAPA is the phone number for the Napa Sentinel if you would like to obtain the press packet. Now, Archives on Audio address very quickly. Archives on Audio, box 170023. Box 170023, that's in San Francisco, 94117, 94117-0023. Phone 415-346-1840, 415-346-1840, write or phone to the attention of Paul. And again, neither myself nor the station makes money out of this arrangement. Now, bear in mind, too, tomorrow night on sister station KKUP from 8 p.m. to midnight, Uncle Sam and the Duce, American Support for Mussolini and the Mythology of the Corporate State, a fundraiser for KKUP. Program listeners to this program heard a few months back. That basically winds it up for me for this evening. I'm going to conclude on that note. I'll give you the information next week as we go into Eastern Europe, the Soviet Union, as well as probably updating some of the CIA-SNL connections. I will go into the stuff about where to obtain the various documents that we offer here at KFJC next week. That winds it up for me for this evening. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week.